To say that there's people coming for your children isn't hyperbolic. If you've been paying attention to the library saga, what's going on at Space Camp, and all these other things, you will know as a parent it's incumbent upon you to protect your children. Bringing Chris McKenna on, the founder of Protect Young Eyes, to talk about some legislation that seeks to do that through technology. We have an incredible culture here in the state of Alabama, but our politics and public policy don't reflect the people of Alabama. Media drives culture. Culture is what drives politics and public policy. Welcome, everyone, to 1819 News, the podcast. I'm Brian Dawson, CEO of 1819 News and host of this here podcast, where we are in pursuit of a free and flourishing Alabama every single week. This week is no different. We've got another great episode for you. This one is very, very, very important. In this world of common sense isn't so common, specifically as it pertains to protecting our children from sexual content, sexual literature in libraries, heck, here even in Huntsville with sexual deviants trying to get to our kids in space camp, we have to focus in and talk about this stuff. And so we've got Chris McKenna coming on. He is the founder of Protect Young Eyes. I met him in Birmingham when he was on his travels talking about this. And they're working on a piece of legislation called the Child Device Protection Bill that essentially makes it mandatory. And I'm going to I may butcher it. He's going to explain it in much more detail. I'm going to give my cursory overview of what I think it is. But when cell phones are sold in the state of Alabama, there's a setting that's built into the default settings that will prevent them from being able to access porn and things like that. And so Chris McKenna, founder of Protect Young Eyes, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Brian. Happy to be here. You did pretty well. I'd love to expand on it, but awesome job.
Yeah, thank you. Well, before we jump in to our conversation with Chris and hearing his story and the things that he's working on, got to tell you guys, citizen-supported news is the only answer to get real journalism. And the only way that citizen-supported news can work is if the citizens support the news. It's kind of built into the name, okay? And you guys listening to this are the citizens. We're the news, and so we need you, the citizens, to support us. And that's possible by going to 1819news.com. There's a button that says Become a Member. You guys go there, click that button. Memberships start as little as $5 a month. And again, I always go back and tell this story. We watched Elon Musk at the New York Times Book Deal Summit when the smug journalist that was interviewing him said, "Hey, you know, what do you think about these corporations and these advertisers that are nervous about, you know, putting their ads on Twitter now that you're not moderating content?" He goes, "Oh, you mean the guys that are trying to blackmail me to censor content going into the election?" I'm paraphrasing. And he said, "Go pound sand," but said it in a much less family-friendly way. And see, here at 1819 News, we're family-friendly. We try to be. And so I'm censoring what he actually said. But he told them basically where they could put all that, and specifically called out Disney and Bob Iger. And the internet was ablaze with this conversation of corporate sponsored journalism. If corporations are sponsoring journalists, when it's the job of the journalists to scrutinize the corporations and those in power, can that really be? Well, no. So the funding source for news has to be the people. That way the people are in the driver's seat of content curation. So go to 1819news.com, become a member today, and get access to behind-the-scenes content, overtime segments, and get cool merch. But more than anything, you'll be supporting honest news in the state of Alabama. All right. So Chris McKenna, we met, as I said, on your tour, probably talking about these very important issues. And I was at a presentation that you did, and I immediately said, "I've got to get this guy on the podcast. He's doing important work." And so I'm going to let you tell us about that important work, you know, and if you want, I mean, you can go into a little bit of background, who you are,
sure.
How did you get into doing this, and then what is this that you're doing?
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, that was my first trip of the new year. I believe it was January 5th, so we were barely into 2024, and we had the opportunity to cross paths, which was amazing, Brian. Protect Young Eyes is something I never intended to be doing. Anybody listening or watching this, please just come to protectyoungeyes.com. We want to fill that gap between intentional families who have technology but are stuck using technologies that were not designed for their children. That's where we live today. And I wish that wasn't necessary. I wish the devices were intuitive enough that they were designed with young people in mind that my website was unnecessary, but we simply don't live in that world. And so that's the organic way in which we began. I was leading a large junior high ministry back in the early 2010s, Brian, and as a man who for years had struggled with pornography myself, who broke free from that, I watched us put that in the pockets of children in my ministry, right? Putting smartphones in the pockets of kids, and that terrified me. So I simply just started doing research for my family's a church that led to a Facebook group, and that led to a website, and that has now led to up to 400 presentations a year all over the world, speaking at schools and churches everywhere with groups of families, like the 100 I had in a room at a church here in Grand Rapids last night, to educate them on how to create a tech-ready home. And we have in-class curriculum and really just trying to help our families create safer digital spaces, families everywhere. And that has then led to me understanding that, yes, one family at a time, and I will help one family at a time until God tells me not to. Yeah. But we also need help from the organizations to do more. They could do more. One software engineer for a half a day at any of these companies could instantly protect millions and millions of kids, but they're choosing not to do that. So this is where some policy, right, a balanced approach to policy needs to do the job in order to nudge them in the right direction, which is what you and I were speaking about, or where I had the opportunity to meet you, is during our time back in January to talk about the Child Device Protection Bill, which is now moving through Alabama, and we are excited about that.
Awesome. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. I mean, I think about, you know, the struggle that every teenage boy goes through as they go through puberty. And I just can't imagine being Brian at 14 with a smartphone. And it's just, it's unbelievable. The temptation that's put before them, the challenges. I have a 14-year-old son. He doesn't have a phone. That's my solution, but everyone's going to parent differently. And it does seem, I don't know what it is about our society and our culture, that protecting children, which used to be probably at the top of the list for what government did, what churches did, what families did, like what everyone in a society did, the safety and well-being of children was you know, preeminent, prominent, whatever, not so much anymore. And seeing that specifically in the technology, I am of the, you know, imagine this, Brian, with a tinfoil hat idea. That never happens except every episode. But, you know, I think that a lot of these tech companies and the people that are behind, you know, trying to make the, you know, traditional Christian America, trying to degrade our cultural through decadence and all of these other things, some of the efforts are intentional. And so it actually doesn't surprise me that cell phones are not set up with the default setting, because if someone has a deep desire to look at porn and they're 30 years old and they buy a phone, they can figure out how to turn these things off so that they can go do that, right? And so it's not crazy to think you should put some type of a hindrance in the way, and that if the person is, you know, able, they can go. And anyway, I'm not going to get into all of it, but, you know, whether it's intentional, not intentional, this is something that the legislature can take a look at. I think it's been done in other states. So talk to us about specifically, what is the problem? What needs to happen to solve it? What does it look like if we win? And what does it look like if you don't?
Excellent. Right. So every smart device that is in front of you right now, wherever you happen to be, there are three things that are true about that device. Number one, it knows where you are. Number two, it knows your birthday, because when you set up the iPhone, you put in an Apple ID and it asks you for a birthday. Or on your Android device, you created a Gmail account and it asks you for your birthday, whatever that was, right? Yep. So it knows how old you are, and it has a filter, a generally accepted filter that blocks obscenity, that blocks the horrible things that were 100 times worse today than anything you or I had access to growing up, right? Yeah. And there it is right on the device. But there's a filter that blocks those things. It's just often hidden. We live in a time where if you try to set up an iPhone for your 7th or 8th grade son or daughter, you have to hunt for protection 30 steps deep. We have it all explained on our website. And again, I wish this wasn't necessary. The Device Protection Bill that we've co-authored with the National Center on Sexual Exploitation says that's wrong. It should be the other way around.
Yeah.
default protection, that should be automatic. You should have to hunt for exploitation. So let's not leverage the realities that I just explained. It knows where you are, it knows your age, and it has a filter, and say, listen, when you activate a device for a child and the Apple ID knows that it's a seventh grader based on the age, turn on the filter. When that Android device, when the Gmail account is attached to it, and it's for an eighth grader because it's a 14-year-old birthday, right? You said 14. I also have a 14. I have twin 14-year-old sons, right? So I get it. And when you activate a device and it knows that birthday is 14 years old, automatically turn on the filter. That's it.
Yeah.
And what's interesting and also frustrating about this is that they already know how to do this. So for example, last September of 2023 with iOS 17, right? Apple rolls out a new operating system update every fall. That's just the pattern they're in. iOS 17 rolls out, and for ages 0 to 12, if you create an Apple ID for a child on a new phone, ages 0 to 12, guess what it does now? It automatically enables a filter. In other words, they know how to do it. It's feasible. It's just the decision, for whatever reason, and the same decision has been made at Google, because they've been doing this default filter on for the youngest kiddos for a couple of years now. There's a decision that's been made that, well, we want to block it for fifth graders, but we don't want to block it for seventh graders and above. And we're simply saying that doesn't make any sense. Sure. All of Alabama's minors should have this feature whereby if a phone is being activated for a minor, automatically turn it on. If not, then keep it off, right? And that is why this is so narrow. It's technically not only feasible, but it's very narrow. And that's intentional because it's using existing technology on the device to stay out of the way of adults who have I don't like this, and neither do you, but there's a constitutional right to pornography. We're not going to get in the way of that First Amendment right. But if a child, you've said it already, we have a unique duty of care for our children as a society. Therefore, as we do in the physical world, right, we prevent children from accessing dangerous, horrible, explicit places in the physical world. It's simply applying that same principle with the amazing technology that we have to do the same thing for kids in the digital world. That's it. That's the premise of the bill. I couldn't explain it, you know, and that's why it's so common sense. You step back and you go, well, why haven't we already done this, right? Why isn't that the way it already is? Well, that's why the legislation is necessary to move in that direction.
Sure. So legislation, let's just say I'm just going to stop because words are being challenging with me right now. Legislation. There it is. I did it. Okay.
That's it. Got it.
So the legislation, if the first thing, what kind of people would fight this legislation, Chris? Surely everyone would want this, right?
Surely everyone should. And you know, what's fabulous in Alabama, it's HB 167, the Child Device Protection Bill. And I would love for individuals to go and check it out. Not sure when, you know, you might be listening to this, but at the time of this conversation that I'm having with Brian, it is now passed out of committee and now moving into the House. So we're excited for its progress. Why? Because it has so many co-sponsors, right? On all sides of the aisle. This is legislation that is bipartisan, right? It makes perfect sense. And so that's our position. But what we often, you know, run into is there are these tech coalitions that have, you know, funding from many of the organizations that are going to be impacted by this, right? The Apples, the Googles, the Samsungs, or the Amazons. And the tech coalition comes in and they tell stories about the First Amendment. They tell stories about what isn't possible. And they continue to tell stories while saying they still care for kids, yet they don't come with any solutions.
Sure.
And we have a solution. They just simply don't like it. And that's, you know, where our paths diverge. So, right, who could fight this? At the end of the day, you step back and go again, why haven't we done this? There's no reason. The illustration I use, Brian, is it would be like buying a car and the buckles for the seatbelt are hidden in a box in the trunk under a camouflage blanket, and they don't tell you that they're there. And then you get home, you get in a little fender bender, and you bruise yourself because you didn't have a seatbelt on. And then the next day you look in the trunk for something and you go, wait a minute, there were seatbelts in the trunk?
Yeah.
And they were under this blanket and nobody told me about them, right? That's a little bit like the situation we have right now when it comes to these protections. They're already there. We shouldn't have to hunt for them.
Yeah. So what about the porn industry, Pornhub? Are they lobbying against this?
No, they aren't. They're okay. Not at fault. The bill doesn't this is a bill for the manufacturers. Okay. Those who manufacture that own the operating systems, the patent holders, right, of the devices that we use. So kind of the big four being Samsung, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Samsung and Google both being on the hook for a device because Samsung manufactures it. Google is the patent holder for the operating system of Android on the device. But those are the ones. There's separate legislation that is moving wonderfully around the United States, age verification, which holds pornographers and pornography sites accountable for age verifying at that website level, millions and millions of websites that are out there. That is necessary because, Brian, there's all kinds of responsibility that's necessary in what I call the tech stack, right? There's a stack of technology that sits behind everything that we use, even though we don't really think about it. Those are internet service providers. Those are those who create and sell the websites like GoDaddy and others. There are apps and websites. And then there's the device, that thing that's in our hand, that's sort of like the top of the stack. And again, to your point on our responsibility, our duty of care to children, right now we have the situation where there is an egregious lack of responsibility all throughout the stack, and I just think that that's the problem. So yes, age verification to hold pornographers accountable to age verify once someone shows up at the door, but let's automatically turn on the filter that stops millions of kids from even getting to the door in the first place in the device that's in their hands. That's this bill.
Sure. Okay. So if it passes, what does that look like? What's the timeline, and then what ends up happening, and like what kind of changes come from that?
That's right. So what happens is devices that he manufactured after a certain date. I can't remember. We're in 6 or 7 different states right now. I was in Arizona testifying in favor on Monday. We've already passed this legislation in Utah as of last week, signed into law by Governor Cox. So I can't remember if its devices manufactured on or after January 1st, 2025 or 2026, but the idea is it's for devices manufactured after a certain date would have to have this auto on based on date provided by the user when the device is activated in the state. And that's an important distinction, Brian, that is probably worth explaining because sometimes the bill is shot down because people go, well, what about retailers? And what happens if I buy a device in one state and I carry it in? It has nothing to do with retailers. In fact, it explicitly says that retailers are not at fault here. It has nothing to do where the device is sold or bought. That has no play. It's where it's activated. So let's imagine that in 2026, after this bill is passed, you buy a device manufactured after the effective date of the bill from me in Michigan, okay? You live in Alabama, and you buy through eBay my device from Michigan. The first thing you're going to do with my old iPhone, I don't know, 16, whatever it is at that point in time, is you're going to do a factory reset on it and then activate it in Alabama. Now, going through the activation sequence, there are 9 steps when you activate an iPhone, and that's going to then go, wait, ping tower in Alabama. Now I know it's in Alabama. Okay, then I activate and I'm going to look for a date based on the age, filter on or filter off. It all happens with software. It doesn't matter where it's bought or sold. That's the beauty of this from a technical perspective. Sure. Because software figures it out. The argument is, well, Apple is going to have to ship or Google is going to have to or Samsung ship different devices to Alabama. This is horrible for business, horrible to commerce, it disrupts the supply chain. That is categorically false. It's just a red herring. We don't ship separate devices to Arizona because they don't observe daylight savings time, do we?
No.
Right? When you pass the border, it knows where you are and therefore it changes your time. Software figures it out.
Yeah, it's just mind-boggling, and again, that's, you know, just me and my tinfoil hat. I just have a hard time believing that there's not more behind them wanting to leave these filters off than just mere inconvenience for the, you know, for the company. Oh, you know, this is going to be hard for us, or we're going to put all this effort into making, you know, not doing this when it's really not that hard. It seems like it would be very, very simple. With the amount of effort that they're putting fighting, they could have already put into software engineering and it would be sure. Done. You know?
Yeah. I was going to offer a little bit on that, and I don't know all of the reasons, but there's a couple of things that I think are going on here. Number one, Brian, is nobody tells these manufacturers what to do, and they know it.
Yeah.
They have lived as an industry outside of the law for decades.
Yeah.
They are protected by a blanket of immunity, CDA 230, that was passed in 1996, 28 years ago, pretty much giving them carte blanche permission to ship whatever feature they want to any of us and not be held accountable for what we do inside of those features. Now, I get it. I want industry to flourish. I'm all about that. But at what point is there an irresponsibility? And I believe we passed that point of irresponsibility, where there has to be some best business practices for you to earn that kind of blanket immunity. And we just simply don't have that right now. So I think that's part of what's going on, is just this mindset of above the law.
Yeah.
This is why there are no laws that hold manufacturers accountable for what they do. This is the one. This is the first, right? Which is why we're so excited about it, because it seems so common sense and so easy for them to do. The other part of this, and I think this is, it's interesting and also incredibly frustrating, is when you look at the leaders of large technology organizations, like you study them, you look at the heads of Google, or even if you read about Steve Jobs, Brian, what you notice about them is none of them give their children these technologies.
Mm.
They know that it's poison. They know, therefore, they don't give it to their children, but they feed it to the rest of us, whatever it happens to be, right? Violent, whatever access. So there's a lot of fascinating things going on that I think make it make a little more sense, that you go, wait a minute, why is it good for my kids if you who created it agree it's not good for yours? That's a signal that we should all be paying attention to.
Yeah.
Because I want every parent who's listening to this to be angry, right, at the situation that we're in, but own your home.
Yeah.
You and I have decided to not give our sons technology. Good. We use the phrase delay is the way. In this tech stack, there is a layer of responsibility that is the home.
Yeah.
And we have the supreme responsibility to ignore culture, ignore pressure, ignore that everybody else has got it, and do our part to delay these technologies, because all of it is marketing that is telling us that our kids are going to be ill-prepared, they're not going to get a good job, they're not going to get a good college or something if they don't have access. I've been doing this for 9 years, and I've never, in thousands of presentations and tens of thousands of conversations with parents all over the world, I've never had one come to me full of regret saying, Chris, I screwed up. I gave my kids Snapchat too late.
Yeah.
It's never happened.
Yeah.
So yes, we need the policy layer to do its part, and that's what we're going to focus on. But may we not forget our supreme responsibility to also make these kinds of decisions at home too.
Yeah. No, and I think that's a good parting message, is the supremacy of the home and the responsibility of the parent in all things.
That's right.
Don't be pressured into giving your kid a phone just because it's like, and moms are, you know, more susceptible to FOMO, right? Like, and it's almost like a vicarious FOMO, like their fear of missing out. Well, it's not their fear. They're scared that their child's going to miss out if they don't have a phone, or that they're going to get picked on and made fun of because they don't have a phone or whatever. And so somewhere in that maternal instinct of that, they end up giving their child this device that is, you know, a portal into all manner of filth and wickedness, and even aside from the pornography and all that stuff, social media, you know, YouTube, whatever, just those type of things. But yeah, the weird social pressure that comes from social media and everything else, you know, it's an incumbent upon parents to say, hey, you know what, that's fine. My kid's going to be weird for a couple of years while we figure this out. You know, there's a lot of, I'm a homeschooler, homeschool dad. And, you know, there's a lot of people in the homeschool community that it's all about protect, 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 protect. And my philosophy is that you have two pillars that exist, in parenting. You have protect, but you also have prepare. And so when your kids are little, it's all protect, no prepare. But as they get older, the protect starts to come down and the prepare starts to go up. And so figuring out where cell phones are on that protect, prepare, you know, for my son, you know, he knows how to use the phone. Like he's not, you know, he's not going to like get it and be like, what's this? Like he knows how to use a phone. Like my,
absolutely.
I've got seven children. My 2 year old knows how to use the phone, right? They're just that's like right. The level of intuitive is crazy.
They do.
So they're not missing out on that. And so, but I want to teach him how to use it responsibly. If he ends up at like a baseball tournament where he's going to be gone for a couple of days or whatever, we have a cell phone that we call it the home phone that yep. he brings with him or whatever, but he knows not to get on it for anything other than to make emergency phone calls. And so slowly doing that while warning him about the dangers of it, it's almost like teaching children firearms training. Hey, this is something that you're going to have. If you misuse it, it can be really dangerous and really bad. However, you know, you need to use this right. And so it's, anyway, incumbent upon parents to do that. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, definitely. And it's as if you were reading our mission statement there, Brian, without you even knowing it, because what we say is that we do research, education, and advocacy so that parents can have practical solutions and children who are prepared, balanced, and protected online. So there you go. You use the words.
I missed balance.
That's okay. We could all use a little more of that. And you even summarized the, you know, even if you've said no, we say teach them as if you've said yes.
Yeah.
And that's the exact principle that you were talking about there with your kids. So I love it, man. Spot on.
Good stuff. Well, anything else listeners need to know about this legislation, your organization, momentum across the country? I mean, anything. What else?
Well, I would love if they want to stay connected, because I know sometimes it can be a little intimidating to step into the policy space, not sure where to start, but each of you there in your respective community, you have access. Make your feelings, make your thoughts known, reach out, send an email, go to a town hall meeting, whatever it is. I think, you know, as citizens, we can be encouraged to do those things. And if you come to our website, if you want to come and receive our newsletter, which we call the download, that's where I'm often reporting on these things. We're very active on social media, trying to keep parents involved, because that army of moms out there who you referred to, they are our staunchest supporters and marketers, and don't mess with the mama bear. So we love all of them who come around us and support this to protect their kiddos. And so as we talk about the bill that's moving here in Alabama, as you look for us asking for support, whether it's on social media or other places, to ask you to make phone calls, we would love to have that happen.
Sure. And what was your website again?
ProtectYoungEyes.com.
Okay. I would encourage you guys to go there. Hearing of their mission statement and what they're trying to do, it's an organization that's trying to help people, help parents in a difficult time. We've never traversed this before. This is not something we can generationally hand down wisdom necessarily, as it gets into the nuances of how to prepare your children to use technology in a technological world full of temptation and you know, vice everywhere. I think that it sounds like an amazing resource, and I know the people that introduced us speak extremely highly of you and your organization.
Thank you, Brian. Blessed by that. Thank you.
Awesome. Chris McKenna, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
All right, guys. Well, that'll wrap it up. Until next time, put your trust in God and keep your powder dry.